This meeting is now being recorded.
So you can see here, I created an academic college transcript project, and I have the XSDs that are associated with that. So I have academic record 19, college transcript 16, and core main 114. I'm using XJC, which comes with the Java JDK, to generate Java domain objects out of those. And so here I specify my configuration, where to find the XSDs. So under main resource XSDs, I have a binding file, which is just configuration. So you can kind of control the, how the files are, Java files are created based on the XSDs. And it's pretty much vanilla. I have one configuration in there for dealing with dates. And then I tell it where to put the generated files. So here it's going to put them under generated sources. So here you can see on the left we have generated sources, and it's created all of the Java objects associated with those XSDs. So now in my Java language, I can directly instantiate a college transcript. So then let me pause and show you examples of what you can do once you have the Java object representation. So stop this. Okay. Can you guys see my screen?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So here what I've done is I wrote a series of unit tests to show you examples of what you can do once you have the object representation. And so this first one I did is I generated a JSON schema from those Java objects. So this from the Java objects in the XSD, you can see on the right here, I've generated the JSON schema that would be equivalent to the XSD. So it's like the JSON rules for validation rules. The other two tests that I wrote are examples of marshaling from that Java object representation to JSON, using two different ways of doing it. You can do it with Jackson, you can do it with Moxie. I think Moxie is going to be the preferred. I kind of ran out of time doing this, and the Moxie one isn't working 100%. The Jackson one is. I just have some configuration issue. So let me show you what the outputted JSON looks like. So stop this. Oh, this is a rough demo. And then present this guy. Okay, so here now you can see that in my Java object representation, I've created a college transcript, and I just set just as a sample, the document ID to my transcript, or my document ID here, and then I've marshaled that to JSON. And so here on the right, you can see the JSON representation that's come out. So again, the Java object representation is generated from the XSDs, and then from that Java object, I can serialize to multiple formats. I can serialize to JSON, or I can serialize to XML. And it's the same source Java file that are used to do that. And then in my programming language, I just deal with the objects. And then the marshaling is done by the frameworks. So we can go to XML, we can go to JSON. If there's a future down the road marshaling language that's different, then we would just use that framework to marshal to that to that language.
Question for you. This is Jerry.
Yep.
If you were receiving a JSON instance and wanted to validate it, one of the things you would have to do is interrogate for the namespace in order to get the right version of the schema. That's normally a setting you set in the validator, right? Is there a way to reasonably interrogate that JSON object to find out what they're using as the namespace, the limiter?
So I was thinking about that
I was thinking about that a little bit
this weekend, and so far PESC has been really good about keeping things backwards compatible. So as long as you're using a newer version, and you should be able to receive any older version and marshal it just fine. But yeah, if you want to look at exactly what version they're using, then you would use some JSON namespacing. JSON has some ways of doing that. I'm not kind of handling that in this demo. In this demo, all I'm doing is generating the Java objects from the XSD, and then from those Java objects, I can marshal to XML either direction. Go marshal to XML or JSON, or unmarshal from XML or JSON back into those objects. As long as what I'm receiving is backwards compatible, that will work. There won't be any issues with that. Go ahead.
But if we were to
I agree with Sam. If it's the PESC XSDs are backwards compatible, so for those you don't need namespaces. For other stuff you do, and so I implemented namespaces with Moxie. I don't know if Jackson supports it. It might, but Moxie supports namespaces.
I think it does.
Here's
the problem with namespaces is that the default for the transcript allows for user extensions that are being used, and so as a result, namespaces have to be intelligible. Otherwise, we're going to have a problem right out of the gate. So I think in worst case, as I've looked at it, we would have to agree on what the namespace delimiter is. The default is a colon. And that seems to work, and I think we just need to agree on that. Isn't that the worst case, Sam?
I mean, that sounds right. I haven't had to delve into that in the stuff that I've been doing. Like I said, as long as things are backwards compatible, it doesn't really the market.
Well, what I'm saying is that isn't necessarily true even today. That just because they're backward compatible doesn't mean that we don't need to know about the namespaces and be able to determine what version or which XSDs to get for extensions and that sort of stuff. So,
yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
Yeah, I ran into that with the user extensions, and like I said, I implemented it with Moxie. You do have to agree on the delimiter, and you also need to, whoever's receiving the JSON needs to know how to map the namespace in JSON to the namespace in XSD. So, for example, you know, for eTranscript California, I had an extension for validating extensions specific to, you know, California community colleges. And so, basically, with Moxie, you configure it to use some arbitrary namespace name. So, for example, CCC for California Community Colleges. And then the receiver has to know that they have to actually map that to the XSD. So there's a URL in the XSD. I forget what it is, but it's basically the URL that identifies the namespace. And that's how you can validate it. But there has to be some agreement on both ends, like Jerry was saying, with the delimiter, but also you need to know what the token is, like CC, what the namespace is that's being used, and map it to the XSD correctly. Okay.
But that doesn't seem like a big deal to me.
No, I didn't have a hard time with it at all. I mean, there's a couple lines of code with Moxie where you add the mapping,
yeah,
the namespace mapping. In other words, in my example, CCC maps to a URL to an XSD, so that when you're validating it, it knows that it needs to go grab this XSD and validate it against a particular XSD. Yeah, and it was not a heavy lift as far as programming it with Java and JaxB, for what it's worth.
And
that's my two.
And the other issue is what to use as an attribute indicator. And the default is the ampersand. We've kind of raised the issue that maybe we didn't want to use the, not ampersand, the at sign. We've kind of thought that might interfere with other things we might want to do with JSON and JSON LD in particular. But anything that has JSON LD embedded in it isn't going to validate against the schema. So I'm not sure that we have to worry about that either, and we could live with a default of at sign just fine. So I'm kind of like coming around to Sam, your way of thinking is that if when it comes to specifying what JSON equivalents should look like, we don't have to say much at all.
Right. Yeah, because I think the tools allow you to go from your rule language to these other formats. So XSD to domain objects to JSON, JSON LD, JSON schema. And it sounds like the nuanced details about what you have to agree on for delimiters, it's not, I mean, as long as we agree on it, it's not that big of a deal. So, yeah, I agree.
So I'm not sure. So I'm out of my depth in saying this because I haven't done that many conversions of that kind, but there's something in the back of my head, and I'm sorry I can't give a more coherent response to this, but there's something like a red flag waving in the back of my head about the at sign. And I think I agree that for current use cases, it doesn't seem to be a big deal, but I'm just flagging that there's something that's niggling at the back of my head that there's a problem with using the at sign, and I don't want us to set ourselves up for failure in the future. We then have to backwards change things and stuff like that. There's some problem with the at sign, using the at sign for attributes, and I can't, I can't place, a part of my language, I can't place it. If I come up with something brilliant about it, I'll email the group I what my actual concern is, but I can't articulate it right now. Sorry. That was a very useful input, I know. Please continue.
One of the issues that we're talking about is transferring, is round-tripping. But the point is, if we can use this tool and not worry about the original SSD and just, little crackler. If we just got the original SSD and then what became the validator was the Java objects and not the SSD, then you wouldn't have to worry about, I mean, if you're translating into JSON, you don't have to say it was an attribute because you're not really doing round trip. What you're doing is you're using the language objects as the how you are representing the correctness, and you could create those attributes that would be attributes in XML just as properties in a JSON class. So I don't, is that possible too, or do we really want to do a translation one to the other, or just do we want to translate them into Java objects?
Well, the problem with that is that in relationships to attributes is that you can have attribute name and content name collisions unless you explicitly identify the attribute as an attribute. And I don't think we have any cases like that in our current standards. And some of our standards don't have any attributes at all, so it's kind of moot in that regard. But to be safe, I think we have to think about how we handle attributes at least a little bit.
So is that a Sam, is that a configuration parameter, what you use for attributes, how attributes work when translating into JSON, or how does that, or is
I
that
mean, I can show you the generated domain object.
Okay.
Looks like I kicked off. Michael, can you make me presenter again? I don't know why my computer's having
While he's getting that up, I know that in Moxie, it's a simple parameter to change the at sign to some other character that would indicate attributes. So if there's a problem with the at sign, we could choose another one. It's just that at sign is the kind of the default.
Okay. So here's the example of the generated class. And so you'll notice that there's XML annotations, and this is what helps the unmarshaler go from XML to the Java objects. And then Jackson and Moxie both have translations for XML tags to do the right thing for JSON. So you have one set of domain objects, and the layer that does the serializing, if it knows how to use the same set of meta information to go to XML or to JSON. And so JaxB will use this information to generate XML, and then Jackson or Moxie would use the same metadata to then translate it to JSON.
Yeah, the only difference is that some of those elements, if they were attributes, would be annotated as attributes. And if there were no name collisions, then you wouldn't care, because you could always find it by name.
I think it'd still be okay, because specify in the annotation XML element, and I assume there's an XML attribute. And even if they have the same name, the metadata is smart enough. Now, in the class, the member variables are going to have different names.
They have to.
But, you know, that's just a rule of the language. And so you'll have, I don't know, student 1, student 2. I don't know what the default name is going to be. But the annotation that's its job, is to figure that out. So you'd have XML element student, XML attribute student, and it would put the right one in the right spot, in other words.
Right. Right. The problem becomes if in your JSON document you send something that is named upper bound true, and that's an attribute in one location, but an element in another location, you don't know which of the representations in the object map that you have here to use.
I see.
And so do we have any situations like that I would doubt it, but again, that's...
But that's what the at sign is used to delineate, right? As long as we agree on what the marker is.
Yeah. So I'm saying that to be careful, we do need to preserve some indicator that in the JSON that it's an attribute. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I'm not wedded to the at sign. It could be anything we choose. But the at sign is the default, and I'm fine with that.
Is there anything else on my demo that you guys wanted to see or had questions on?
I had a question on one of the scenarios we talked about was the situation where you'd actually read JSON in and validate it with this without actually doing a round trip. How mm-hmm. do you do that? What's that situation? So you're parsing the JSON. You have a JSON instance document. And it comes in, and how do you validate it? Can you validate it actually using the rules within the XML schema?
So I didn't
represent.
Yeah, I ran out of time on this demo. I didn't get to that part of it. So my idea, and this is, you know, I haven't fully fleshed this out or implemented it, but my idea would be have a domain-specific validator. So you would have like a Java class that would validate the Java object. I mean, you have a variety of choices, and if anyone else has done this, you know, please chime in.
I've had it.
Oh, okay. How'd you guys do it?
Yeah. Well, you know, we take the JSON and we just marshal it into the object that you've got here that's generated by XJC. And then, with Moxie, what you do is you create a JAXP context, which includes all of the schemas that you're going to be that you need, the XSDs that you need to validate your document. And then there's a Java call to validate it against that JAXP context, and it will validate against all the XSDs.
There you go.
Yeah, so for example.
It really is only a few lines of code for a programmer. It isn't bad, though there's a lot of stuff happening under the covers.
True. So for a college transcript, you know, I created a JAXP context with the college transcript XSD, and you know, the XSD that defines the user extensions. So when the parser gets down to the user extensions, it knows that it needs to validate it against a different schema. And that coincides with our earlier conversation with the JSON namespaces and mapping it to the correct XSD. That's really the hardest part, is just agreeing on the delimiters and how you're going to parse it, and knowing, for example, that whoever I send my transcript to, my JSON transcript to, needs to know that there's a namespace, CCC, that maps to a particular XSD if they want to validate it. If they don't want to validate it, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so that, okay. But that's assuming, for that validator to work, you have to be able to have enough information, such as something's an attribute, because then it wouldn't map otherwise, right? You'd have the annotation, XML, attribute, and it would test against that.
Right. You just have to know beforehand that what schema was used, right? Because at least to and I could have missed this, but I'm pretty certain this is the case, that in JSON, well, in XML, you can put the namespace information in the document. You know, at the very top, there's the XML namespace attributes, but I didn't find that anywhere supported anywhere in Moxie or JAXON or anything like that. So basically on each end, you just need to know what schema to use to validate it against. For college transcript, like I said, I mean, you could validate just the college transcript. If you have user-defined extensions, and you want to validate those, you need the schema for that, but you could just validate the college transcript portion and ignore the user-defined extensions too. So there's different kinds of combinations of validation that you can employ.
Yeah, what I've been getting at there is that trying to avoid the situation where we create, where PEST creates JSON schemas, and we have a validator. We have to build those things to validate the JSON. On the other hand, you know, having all this XML baggage with JSON, that may affect some of the people that would consume this. So I have some mixed feelings about how to approach this, and just thinking out loud on, you know, how we could do it without causing less work for PESC. Because if we start doing JSON schemas, that's a big effort to duplicate all the things we've done before.
Yeah. I understand. I mean, the nice thing about the way this approach with JAXP and what Sam is showing you and that I've done with EdExchange is that, you know, when we get the document content, you know, either in XML or JSON, it doesn't matter. It gets marshaled into the same Java object that Sam's showing you.
Right.
And then from there, from that object, you know, you can validate it with the same code. So it doesn't, you know, it's the same code that validates whether or not it came in as JSON or whether or not it came in as XML.
Right. How does this handle the translation to the data types in XML?
Translation to data types.
I mean, the point, the built-in data types, like decimal, string. I mean, but there's some more complicated ones that would be used to validate something as a proper number.
In the instance document of XML, it is by default a string. That's all you have. And so it only becomes an issue of validation in the XSD. So I don't think that's an issue. I don't think we have to worry about aligning data types because they all are essentially in the raw state strings. That does bring up one issue that I haven't quite resolved is that in JSON, you can have something represented as a string, a number, or a Boolean. Natively. So,
right, Boolean, yeah. Would be.
Yeah, so, but I'm not sure that that's a problem either.
I mean, would that be, what would that look like if we validated something as Boolean here? What would the code look like? What would the annotation look like?
I mean, as long as both parties are using the object and the marshaller, it's going to work fine. I think the marshaller, and James, maybe you've had experience with this, I would think it would be smart enough to convert to the proper data type if it's able to. So if it received a string version of a Boolean, I would assume the unmarshaller would be able to figure out how to convert that to a Boolean object in Java. But if both parties are using the PESC provided object, you're not going to have that situation.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree, Sam. I mean, I've never really looked into that specifically, but I mean, we both use these for a while where it's marshaling in and out of XML, and I know there's Boolean values in there, so I know it's marshaling, you know,
right,
a string that says true to a Boolean value that is true.
And that would be true of facets as well. If you have a something that's a decimal and you're saying the max decimal digits and things like that, is that handled by this framework?
I mean, it's just going to use a language data type that can store the value, and then the rules on that value is separate. That's the XSD validation. So if the number type that's being represented can be stored in a double would be used if it needs some other data type, big decimal or float or whatever.
So it's
going to use the appropriate data type.
But if you just said you wanted, it could not be any longer than two decimal places. Could that be coded? How would that be coded?
That would just be a validation step.
Yeah, that
so,
would be derived from the XSD and included
right.
in the validation on chips.
Right.
So that wouldn't be using this object. I'm a little bit confused. That wouldn't use this object. So that I would expect something within the annotation for XML element to have some kind of test, but that's not where it's being.
No, that's not how this works. So the way this works is the annotation is metadata about like where to get the information, and then the data type is what stores the information, and then validation is a separate step, and that's using the XSD or maybe.
Oh, so it's not using these objects to do the validation.
No. Correct.
So it's doing another parsing of the XSD to do the validation.
Right. And that's kind of the other idea is, you know, instead of having, you know, would it be possible to have a domain validator, so a Java validator, without having to go back to the XSD, so generate some sort of Java validator from an XSD? I haven't played with that, but that's kind of another possibility that, you know,
yeah, that's actually the way I was thinking it worked, but that once I started looking at the code, I said, well, that's not the way it's working. Yeah.
Right.
So I know with Moxie, you know, you do create this with what they call a JAXB context, and you can give that context as many schemas as you want, and you can hold that context in application memory, and then basically you're just going to tell every once in a while when you want to validate a document, you just grab a lightweight validator from that context. And when you validate anything with that validator, it's going to use the schemas that you've instantiated in that context. So I don't know if that helps at all, or if I understood your question, but that's the way I do it with Moxie. So I'm not instantiating schemas all the time. You create this context, and that's really what it's intended for, and with that, with the Moxie framework. So, anyways, I don't know if that helps.
That does.
Yes, I guess part of the concern is that there's a lot of overhead with establishing that context to start with, and
correct.
It's not that bad. And you do it once when you start your process, perhaps, and then you use it until your process is done, several million transcripts later, perhaps. Who knows?
Right. Right.
So I'm not sure that adding a repository of domain objects adds a tremendous amount of value compared with the overhead of having to maintain those domain objects, when they can be generated fairly easily at the start of the process.
So what does that context look like? I mean, what you read in all this XML, and it doesn't look like this, right? It doesn't look like Java classes.
Yeah, so I can do
No, it's sorry, Sam. Go ahead. Go ahead. Sam?
Okay, yep. So here.
Leaving the meeting.
Okay, so you can see my Marshaller, so line 28 there, Jaxby context factory. This is creating the context. And then there's another parameter, I believe, on this context you can add if you want to specify an XSD. And James, I don't know if you had anything that you could demonstrate. I didn't work through all the examples on this.
Well, unfortunately, we're running
out
of time, so.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I could. It's not going to be much different than what you just showed, though, Sam. I mean, I could. If people want me to, I can show something the next meeting. It would be very similar. I mean, I could show more of Moxie, right? Just validating with the schemas and stuff if necessary, and some output documents.
So it's, the Jaxby context, whatever that looks like, and what the data, what that object looks like, is how it. That's the object it uses to validate. So that's good. I understand.
Right.
Well, thank you, everybody. We have run out of time. Sam, thank you especially for, and we have to figure
Thanks,
out
Sam.
The problem.
Yeah.
We got the problem of the presentation. We should. I thought I was able to move around last week when Michael and I tried it, but.
Yeah,
I think
no, it's not your fault. I think part of the problem is when you dial in first by phone and then you connect by computer and then you try to merge, it just didn't. For those presenting, I'll send out a reminder. I think it's best if you connect by computer first.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
And we'll see if that relieves it. But again, Sam and James and Michael, you know, I can make you all presenters. And, you know, on the next call next week, maybe we can all dial in 15, 10 minutes early and
make to see if it all works. Yeah.
Test it out. Yeah.
Yeah,
Michael and
I agree.
Michael and I were emailing at 1:45 just to make sure things were up. So great. Then, Michael, we're on for next Monday.
Yes, we are. And I'll get the topic. I'm not sure what the topic is. I'd like to carry forward this. I'd maybe just ask some questions. But any other topics anybody especially want to cover or continue approach?
No, yeah, I think this is a good approach and this is useful. Thank you, Sam. I will be at the NCS conference next week, the data conference in Washington, so I will not be on the call.
Okay.
I'll be there too, Alex, but I think I'm going to duck out.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Okay, great.
Okay, thanks,
folks.
Thank you, everybody, and
leaving the meeting.
Recording now, Michael.
Michael McSullivan. Okay. Yes.
Thanks, guys.
Leaving the meeting.
Bye.
And Jerry.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Leaving the meeting. Leaving the meeting.
Sam Allen rejoining.
Leaving the meeting. Leaving the meeting.
Jeff.
Leaving the meeting.
Steve is back.
Leaving the meeting.